Welcome back. It's a Monday, the 11th day of July, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and I got to admit up front, I've been having some trouble lately trying to decide how to begin each day's news show, simply because it gets more and more insane. You've heard me talk about that. More and more obvious that the wheels have already come off the wagon, and yes, the evil Satanists have done it deliberately. It was a well-executed takedown, even though most Americans still haven't figured it out, largely because so many people, not just in America, but worldwide, have been dumbed down to the point where they won't know what hit them, even though so many are already dead men walking. So where does that leave us today? Well, honestly, let's just dive right in, starting with one of the places that keeps vying for the most idiotic, insane place on planet Earth, New York City, which, as Max Lavo points out for SHTF Plan, has just reinstated their idiotic face diaper rebreather mandate. Yeah, another mask advisory, and where better, as the sixth wave, yeah, it's hard not to lose count, has already hit the fully vaxxed, revaxxed, double and triple vaxxed city. And you'd think right there, people might start to figure it out. But hey, we're talking New York here, right? Says the piece, even though almost 88% of all New Yorkers over the age of 18 have been fully vaccinated, and that's even a moving target, the sixth wave of booga booga Fauci flu has allegedly begun to spread through the city. It's so bad that the communist overlords there are reinstating the mask advisory and demanding people wear masks indoors, too. Why not? To protect themselves, are you really that stupid, from getting a disease that the vast majority of the city has already been double, triple, who knows how many times vaccinated against. And again, you'd think they would figure it out. According to mainstream media reports, the worst, and they put that in quotes, COVID variant is spreading throughout the fully vaccinated population of the People's Republic of New York. It's called BA.5. And I guess that stands for badass, so you probably need poke number 5. Appears to escape immunity, or at least escape whatever it is that people have been poison poked think they have, and transmit more easily, leading some to call it the worst version of Omicron yet. And a recent study on severe outcome risk from reinfection rates raises alarm bells, reported NBC New York. And Manhattan, Queens, Brooklyn, the Bronx, and Staten Island have all been in the high CDC risk category for the latter half of May. They transitioned a bit through June, but the relief was short-lived because the poison poke people haven't figured it out yet, but they don't have any immunity anyway. Slavo kindly provides some New York City comic relief, like a poster from NYC Health asking the dumbed-downed question, which masks provide the most protection against booga, booga, booga COVID-1984? I'm inclined to suggest, folks, that for the answer, they could go find themselves a doggy poop disposal site and see whether or not they can smell it through whatever it is they're wearing. If they can, it's not protecting them, and if they can't, it's already too late. All right, well, enough of that, folks, but at least you can see what your host is up against each and every day of late. Let's go with this one, another contender for the top slot today, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, ERCOT. And if you remember that name, you're probably hearkening back to the blackouts not too long ago. Of course, that was wintertime. Anyway, they operate Texas's power grid, and they have asked households and businesses to conserve power of late, warning of potential rolling blackouts because the grid faces, quote, a potential reserve capacity shortage with no market solution available. That's because there's no market available anymore in communist USA, folks, said a notice released on Sunday night. Soaring temperatures are driving record power demand, and all of this, along with low wind output, which they were mandated to put their money on, could push the grid near its breaking point. And this is kind of funny in a sick, twisted way. A reporter at Dallas-Fort Worth WFAA tweeted, "Buckle up and tighten up. Could be an iffy day for the Texas energy grid," unquote, which prompts your host to add, "Of course, what you don't want to do is drive your electric car, because you're not going to be able to charge that much anyway." Oh, yeah, and that prompts me to add this. Has anybody driving these things actually figured out what an air conditioner in an electric car does to your already very limited range and high recharge times? At least that story lets me work this one in from Jessica Rabe of Data Trek Research via Tyler Durden and Zero Hedge. Only 14%, you got to wonder what's wrong with them, of U.S. survey respondents say they would definitely buy an electric vehicle. Not enough, the story notes, to support a vibrant used EV market, especially when you realize that putting a new battery in those stinking things is going to cost you more than a used car. But honestly, folks, it's the propaganda here I found interesting. Consumer Reports recently released the results of a nationally representative survey of 8,027 American adults on their views towards EVs. And some of the major takeaways include that 14% say they would definitely buy or lease an electric-only vehicle. Just a bit over half said they'd consider it. And 28% said no way, they wouldn't consider buying one. Now, the three top concerns that are listed here demonstrate a certain amount of ignorance, too. Number one, charging logistics, such as where and when I'd be able to charge it. They left off if. The number of miles was number two that the vehicle can go before it needs to be charged, less, of course, if it's either hot or cold, because whether you have to run a heater or a cooler, it comes out of that same limited battery. And number three, the costs involved with buying, owning, and maintaining an electric-only vehicle. Like, since you probably can't afford to put a new battery in it and pay the actual cost as opposed to the subsidized ones, maybe you just have to throw it away. But oops, we got a disposal problem there, too. Isn't it funny, folks, how people who worry about your carbon footprint don't worry about disposing of their toxic EV battery? In terms of the charging-related concerns holding people back, and this too is illustrative, the top three were not enough public charging stations, nowhere to plug my car in to charge it at home, and number three, the inconvenience of charging. How about there's not enough power in the entire electric grid to charge too many of these things, especially if they succeed in forcing more people into them? And if you had to pay the real costs, you couldn't afford it anyway. But the real crux of the story seems to boil down to tax incentives. Since these things aren't even remotely economically feasible, hey, how can we incentivize or force people into signing up for one anyway? Most respondents, 60%, said they were not too familiar or not familiar at all with the fundamentals of owning EV, nor, when it came to almost half the survey, were they familiar with the tax rebates and discounts at the time of purchase or lease. And I mentioned this survey and the story, folks, primarily because in this entire article, there's not even a hint of the fact that, no, if the entire United States were to transition to EVs tomorrow, there's no way on God's green earth that they'd be able to charge those EVs, because the power grid would have long since gone down before even a significant fraction of that conversion. It's already going down anyways. They mandate wind and solar. And you know darn well there's no way they'll suggest anybody calculate how much natural gas, oil, or coal would have to be burned to even come close. And the point here is that this is where even simple engineering, folks, makes the obvious undeniable. They all know there is no EV in your future. As a matter of fact, there may not even be a future if they have their way. And that, of course, is the real point. Over the weekend and heading into Monday morning, there was big news out of Twitter. Seems like they've been lying about a whole lot of stuff, including just how many of the so-called Twitter users weren't actually real people at all. You know, the terms fakes and bots and, oh yeah, fraud. As the week came to a close, so apparently did Elon Musk's deal to buy Twitter. Once presumed purchaser Elon Musk sent a letter to Twitter terminating the merger agreement because, quote, Twitter is in material breach of multiple provisions of the agreement, and it appears to have made false and misleading representations upon which Mr. Musk relied when entering into the merger agreement, and is likely to suffer a, and this is capitalized, company material adverse effect. And he notes that term is defined in the merger agreement. And as has been discussed now for quite some time, the problem seems to boil down to false and misleading representations, or the failure to provide information, particularly when it comes to fakes, fake users, aka bots. And it looks like there could be an SEC filing that might actually run afoul of the law as well. Twitter claims that the number of fakes and bots in their user base is something on the order of 5%, but Musk seems to think, and the evidence seems to back him up, that it's a whole lot more than that. He made these key points in the foregoing letter, saying Twitter is in breach of the merger agreement because the agreement appears to contain materially inaccurate representations, and that's a legal term. Specifically, Twitter represented that no documents that Twitter filed with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission since January 1 of 2022 included, quote, any untrue statements of a material fact. But seems like they've been doing exactly that. and he goes through a whole lot of them. Furthermore, although Twitter has not yet provided complete information to Mr. Musk, he continues, that would enable him to do a complete and comprehensive review of spam and fake accounts on Twitter's platform, he has been able to partially and preliminarily analyze the accuracy of Twitter's disclosure regarding what's called its MDAU. And if you're curious about that, folks, I certainly was. It stands for Global Monetizable Daily Active Users. And they claim to have 229 million of them. Or is it a whole lot less? While the analysis remains ongoing, all indications, says the letter, suggest that several of Twitter's public disclosures regarding its MDAUs were either false or materially misleading. And these are very serious allegations. Before the weekend was out, Twitter, which originally didn't want to be bought out, then changed their mind, and that's where it stood for months until this last week, then threatened to sue for failure to complete the deal in a bid to force him to buy the socialist media platform for 44 billion fiat bucks at just over 54 bucks a share, way over market price. And on Sunday night, Musk tweeted out a series of photos of himself in a fit of laughter, saying, first they said I couldn't buy Twitter, then they wouldn't disclose bot info, now they want to force me to buy Twitter in court, and now, he laughs, they have to disclose bot info in court. Which leads your host to be among the many, many today asking, gee, was that maybe the real agenda here all along? Or at least part of it. For just one example, S.D. Wells, writing for Natural News, asks, could it be that Elon Musk's real intent to purchase Twitter was a head fake to expose their fraud to the SEC and maybe destroy the company in the process? And if you want to do your own research to see what's happening here, he notes, don't try to use Google to do it. For their part, though, Zero Hedge noted that Twitter shares plunged as much as 9% in pre-market trading on Monday before paring the losses down a bit, although some analysts are now saying Twitter might trade as low as $24 after Elon Musk pulled his bid. At this point, your host has to admit, no, I don't claim to know what's really going on here, although I have seen the fraud and the censorship and all the other nastiness that Twitter's been involved in, along with all the other socialist media platforms for quite a while now. But I can't help but think that the real bottom line on some of these companies might be a lot closer to zero once people really figure it out. I guess time will tell. But still, I can't help but think we're probably not too far from the time now when a lot of people would rather have either food or diesel fuel than Netflix, to Facebook, or tweets. Before I try to wrap a few of these things up today, I do want to throw out one more into the mix, another one of those, oh yeah, we could have seen this coming, a lot of us did, stories. This comes from Zachary Stiber via the Epoch Times about COVID-19 and natural immunity. Protection against severe illness, he writes, from so-called natural immunity remains far, vastly superior to the protection, allegedly at least, bestowed by the Zyklon B injections, a.k.a. COVID-1984 vaccines, according to what? Yet another new study. This one comes from researchers in Qatar, which says effectiveness of primary infection against severe, critical, or fatal COVID-19 reinfection was 97.3%, irrespective of the variant of primary infection or reinfection, and with no evidence for waning. Huh? In other words, folks, you're better off having had the actual booga-booga flu than any of the pos and pokes that are allegedly supposed to prevent it. And similar results were found in various subgroup analyses for those greater than 50 years of age, said Dr. Laith Abu Radad of Weill Cornell Medicine Qatar and colleagues, after studying long-term natural immunity in unvaccinated people. And it beats the heck out of the supposed vaccines. Tell me something we don't already know, and oh, by the way, that doesn't even count the chance of you dying of some other nasty side effect now, does it? This is another one of those days when I think it's apropos to look back about 6 months or so and ask ourselves, how far along down that path towards total economic destruction have we now come? It's not like we haven't seen it en route. The great big bright light up ahead does look like an oncoming train. And at this point, I do have to ask, just how many warnings do we really need or deserve? This one came back in November of last year. See if certain elements don't ring more true now than ever.
Victor Davis Hanson at amgreatness.com seems to be thinking along the same lines that your host has been for quite some time now, and he describes his concept of what's been happening to America as trickle-down Bidenism, asking the question, can 10 months really make a big difference in America? Well, not normally, but weld together a hard-left socialist agenda with the control of the White House and Congress onto the combined forces of progressive woke media, Silicon Valley, the corporate boardrooms, the entertainment industry, academia, and the Wall Street Borg, all in the age of instant and intrusive communications, and of course, AI-type censorship to go along with it. And it's no wonder a country, even a nation as resilient as the United States once was anyway, can descend quite quickly in ways that make America, as it is now, almost unrecognizable. And I don't think there's anybody listening that hasn't noticed that. In other words, he says, 40 weeks of relentless Bidenism finally permeates most of the nation. Your host has been referring to the same phenomenon as the Bolshevik Revolution. Version 2.0. Well, he says, out in the California foothills in the Central Valley, once relatively cheap propane has now more than doubled to a rate of $3.91 a gallon. Here in Colorado, folks, we were paying about a quarter of that during the summertime sales not too long ago. And at about the same time, says Hanson, that I got that propane bill, I filled up the truck with diesel. It was $4.87 a gallon with a credit card, up about $2 a gallon from a year ago, and I thought myself lucky, because the week prior in Palo Alto, I'd seen it at $5.29 a gallon. Not long ago, he says, in Bakersfield, I spoke to an oil man. He described impending new California rules on the horizon concerning almost every aspect of horizontal drilling and fracking as part of his own larger fears. The entire energy industry is shrinking even as demand and profits soar, and consumers need more natural gas and gasoline than ever. So Victor Davis Hanson asks it this way. Has anyone ever heard of leftist Americans deliberately not pumping oil and gas, but still needing so much more output that they suddenly beg the illiberal Saudis and Russians to bail us out? At other times in our history, we've suffered plenty of fossil fuel scarcities due to war, embargoes, and declining reserves, but never has America deliberately created shortages amid a sea of our own natural gas and oil. And note, folks, that this week alone, the Biden regime has been mulling the closure of the L5 pipeline between Canada and Michigan and Wisconsin. No, they don't think they can help the situation, but they're certainly more than willing to try to make it worse. And what's been the reaction from those who slash natural gas and oil production by canceling new federal leases and pipelines, oil fields in Alaska, or warned frackers that new regulations and taxes were just the prerequisites to a rapid phase-out of their entire existence altogether on the pathway to the so-called renewable wind and solar nirvana? When asked if the United States would finally at least increase, i.e. restore previous levels of oil production, Secretary of Energy, sick, Jennifer Granholm laughed and said, ha ha, quote, that is hilarious. To whom, asked Hanson, is that comical? The guy with an older model pickup, doing daily landscape work for his wealthy clients? The waitress who drives 20 miles each way to work? The broke student who commutes to campus? I drove today along a rural avenue next to my farm, where both sides of the street were littered, far more than usually so, with trash. And not just the usual garbage bags and tires, but washers, dryers, refrigerators, car seats and furniture, mattresses of all shapes and sizes. It was an intensification, he says, of the now old story of rural California as an open dumping ground of refuse. There's your leftist environmental consciousness, folks, made real in an environmental and economic meltdown. Wrote Victor Davis Hanson, I stopped to inspect the flotsam and jetsam. The dumpers are careful to clean out their personal addresses, and they rarely leave traceable material, but all of the magazines, newspapers, and printer material were in Spanish. And note, he says, there are no green regulators out here who patrol rural avenues to stop the pollution and desecration of the natural landscape, given the hierarchy of wokeness. What does he mean by that? Illegal immigration trumps the environment. So he says, when I find people in the actual act of dumping their garbage and refuse on my property, like I did last week, they're most likely illegally here, i.e. they don't speak English, and the current clutter may represent spikes and crossings from the non-existent border, as well as redirection of illegal aliens from Texas. Consider, if 2 million illegal entrants will cross that non-existent border in the current fiscal year, and if they're being bussed or dispersed by the Biden regime throughout the United States, well, then small communities of recent immigrants are likely going to feel the surge. And let's not forget, the Biden regime is going to settle past cases of separation of families by awarding them $450,000 apiece. They denied it. They lied about it. Biden himself didn't remember it, which didn't surprise anybody. But now it's back on the agenda again. And regardless, folks, you know that the illegals are already lining up south of the border and heading to El Norte to get their own big free bags of American money. Well, of the paper variety, anyway. And here I have to note one other thing, folks. When have you ever heard about people in America who've been unjustly imprisoned and separated from their kids? Why, shouldn't they get a $500,000 bonanza, too, for each kid separated? Or are some criminals really more equally subsidized than others? When acting White House Deputy Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre was asked why the Biden regime would lavish nearly $500,000 on illegal aliens who broke federal immigration law, but not upon legal immigrants who actually obey America's laws, she seemed bewildered at any criticism of rewarding only those who break the law, saying, well, why would we be giving people who are coming here the right way money? In the process, Ms. Jean-Pierre gave a rare, unguarded summation of the essence of wokeism. If we are going to give away free stuff to Americans, those who do the right things the right way deserve nothing. Those who do the wrong things the wrong way certainly do, because asymmetrical application of the law, or what now passes for it, is the hallmark of wokeism. And here I think Victor Davis Hanson might even be missing the bigger point. It's not just that the wokest leftist idiots can't connect cause and effect and don't understand what might be called perverse incentives. You reward bad behavior, you get more of it. While there are no doubt plenty of useful idiots in this regime, the bigger issue may be that there are a whole lot of them that aren't quite so stupid, do know what they're doing, and their clear intent is to destroy America in every conceivable way. There are some bright spots. Wood is now a bit cheaper than it was 3 months ago. That has to do with futures prices and the collapse there, folks. But still, he says about triple the price of a year ago. I talked to a Mexican-American contractor I know not long ago at Home Depot who was sorting and sifting through a small pile of leftover, overpriced 2x6s. Quote, just the junk is left. It's all junk, he said. When pressed about these disruptions in the supply chains, the empty shelves, the scarce inventories, and delayed or canceled shipments, along with soaring prices, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, remember, the P is silent, folks, like it is in resident, snarked, the tragedy of the treadmill that's delayed. Yeah, cars, lumber, food, all the irrelevant trinkets that people just don't need and aren't going to be allowed to have much longer. After disappearing in the middle of the crisis due to his paternity leave, Transportation Secretary Sick Pete Buttigieg returned to weigh in about how people like me who says you show up on the mall on Christmas Eve, well, obviously there's going to be more challenges. Yeah, that's all that matters, folks. I guess people who make their living repairing roofs had better plan ahead, quit waiting to fix their eaves and gutters on Christmas Eve. Farmers, though, are not procrastinating, but they still aren't always getting paid. Some, for example, are hearing their almond containers are stuck at Asian ports abroad, rotting for lack of longshoremen, and months after shipping, the grower is still getting nothing for his crop. Other payments freeze because California crops can't get onto ships to cross the Pacific from Los Angeles or Long Beach. And no, growers aren't whining about their late-arriving Peloton treadmills. He notes that housing prices, too, are ridiculous, and that on the left coast, what we used to call middle-class homes have gone up over $1,000 a day during the Biden regime, from unaffordable to a sick joke. And let's just skip over the part about medical costs, because that's a complete disaster. And that, your host has suggested, is pretty much undeniably deliberate. Finally, writes Victor Davis Hanson, the country is rapidly re-tribalizing, the most toxic and sickest of all the Joe Biden disaster gifts to America over the last 10 months. The Biden regime fixation with race reverberates throughout the intelligence agencies, the bureaucracy, the Pentagon, and the White House, while the left-wing furies are unleashed, shrieking and searching for mythical white rage und white supremacy. The less new message is that of Bull Connor and Lester Maddox to the core. You are what you look like. Well, and he missed one here, folks. That is, unless you look like you're unvaxxed and you don't have your papers to prove that you're not one of the new N-words. This part, though, is correct regardless of whether you're talking about color or bloodstream. Individuals don't exist. The tribe tolerates no exceptions, no traitors to their racial allegiances. And one more thing, folks. You can identify as, you know, trans this or that, transgender, transsexual, or even transracial, as long as in the process you claim to be non-white. But the only thing you can't claim to be is trans-vaccinated. Why, just because I feel vaccinated, maybe that means I am. I certainly feel like I'm better off having had COVID and not needing the poison poke because I have natural immunity rather than playing mRNA roulette with my immune system. But isn't it just kind of funny, and certainly beyond ironic, that in a totalitarian mark of the beast system, anything that's actually antithetical to the God of the Bible is just fine, but you're still subhuman, you know, one of those people, even though we're oh so tolerant, if you don't take their mark. If you haven't seen the old movie Invasion of the Body Snatchers lately, pull it out, take a look, you'll see what I mean. No doubt about it, folks, interesting times, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.